We're looking at James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12. Last week we talked about, or James talked about riches and our kind of view of wealth. There was a joke that Gary Enrich told opening this section. He said he talked about a guy that, an engineer, he just graduated from college. He was on his first job interview, and it was going pretty well, and the interviewer asked him, he said, well, what salary are you looking for? And the guy said, well, $150,000, depends on the benefits. So the guy said, okay. He said, you know, benefits, we could give you maybe 6 weeks vacation, 12 paid holidays, 2 weeks of continuing education, full health insurance for your entire family for life, maybe a leased car every 2 years, maybe even a red Corvette. And the kid looked at him, he said, you're kidding. He goes, well, yeah, I am, but you started it. Life's expectations, you know, when you start out and you think, and life's dreams, and then there's life's reality. And that's kind of where James is at. And I'm going to get to what, as I walk through this, this was the chart that kind of came up in my mind, and we're going to talk about balance in life and kind of what would that balance look like. But as we go, and really this section from verses 7 through 12 is really fairly simple. There's some commands, yes. What James is talking, you know, he's dealing with these Jews that have probably had to leave Jerusalem. Their whole life has been turned upside down. It's no longer the temple. It's, the initial promises of, well, if you become a believer, life will be great. And it's maybe not so great. And so what he's going to kind of walk them through this. And this isn't really the first issue about patience and struggles and testing. He started his book out in chapter 1, verses 2 through 2 and 3. Consider it, and this is kind of what that little chart over here has something to do with. Consider it all joy, brethren, when you encounter various trials. And there's this, count it all joy. But that's what James wants people, us and his readers, to understand. Count it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So he's at the end of his book, and he's kind of going back to this issue. Let me just read verses 7 through 12. Be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, look, the farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and the late rains. You too be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not complain. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealing, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. And above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under judgment. And that kind of seems like that last one is just kind of thrown in there, and hopefully I can kind of tie it together. But there's, these are fairly simple commands. And he starts out, be patient. And, well, why be patient? I mean, Lord, give me patience and do it quick. You know, I mean, there's this, nobody, I'm not sure I've ever prayed for patience. Maybe Diane has for me. But I honestly don't know if I've ever done that. And as I read through this, and I'm thinking James is writing to these guys, be patient. Maybe everybody has trouble with this. Maybe everybody has trouble chilling. And he gives them a reason. He says, be patient, therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. It's like, look ahead to this hope. There's something beyond this life. He's coming back. John MacArthur said he likes to use the word arrival. You know, it's kind of like, look for the arrival. It's like, you know, and I think about this whenever somebody's coming. I called Amy this morning. I said, is Deborah coming in? She's going to pick her up at the airport. And it was supposed to be 9 o'clock, and now it's 3 o'clock. I thought of Joshua. He got on the plane. But there's this, you know, he expected his arrival at, I don't know, 5 or 6 o'clock or whatever it was, 7 o'clock in Costa Rica. And it was like not till 5 in the next morning. So there's this sense of when you're waiting for somebody to arrive at the airport, that's kind of that attitude that I think James is talking about. He's going to arrive. He's coming. You know, all of us would like a plane schedule, you know, like to know the schedule. I mean, all of it, you know, James doesn't give him a time. Just understand, be patient. You're going through struggles. You're going through difficult times. He's coming back. My brother's coming back. Think of James, you know, his older brother. This is his older brother, his older half-brother. And, you know, and he's thinking, when he finally, and as we went through the book of Acts, and James finally believed, when it says in James, and his brothers believed. And he's looking back, think of the anticipation of your brother coming back. So that's why he said, so be patient. Until the coming of the Lord. And he says, well, think about the farmer. Just look around. I was in Phoenix Friday morning, and Fort Hood, the project at Fort Hood is just driving me crazy. I mean, I'm very nervous about it because it's government and it's big. And we are going to, there was a question about whether we had to get the drawings out to them Monday, the 13th, or the 20th. And, you know, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because patiently waiting where the farm. It's like we've worked on this a long time, and I'm like, oh man, if they would just give us one more week, if they would just be a little bit patient. It was like sort of Damocles? What is it? I don't even know what that's from. Hanging over my head, waiting for Ford Hood to call and say, you messed up. I got an email from this, and you ever do this with emails? You see who it's from, and you go, ooh. Does anybody else? I mean, you're like, oh no. And it was a good email. I mean, it was like, okay, they're giving you to the 20th. It was like, I emailed them back right away, and I said, you have no idea the weight that you just lifted from my head. And then I said to him, I said, you know, I got to start thinking about not the building, not the stupid signs. I got to think about the soldiers, the men and women that this building is going to, you know. And so it's how you view things. And James is just saying, look around. Look at the farmers. I've never, you know, I've tried farming, well, gardening, and it didn't work very well. Think of, you know, when you go by, you see these guys plowing an entire field. I thought, can you imagine going out there plowing and no irrigation here? You just have to wait. Wait for the spring rains and wait for the late rains. When we lived in California, they would flood the fields right before they were harvesting because, you know, that's what James is talking about. They wait for the early rains when it starts to germinate. And Gary and Rick said, there's one major rule, unchangeable rule in farming. You don't sow, you don't reap the same day you sow. It takes time. I mean, nobody. With microwaves and instant everything, you know, we want our Christian walk. I want it to just be easier. You know. And James says, think of the farmers. They have to patiently wait about until the early and the late rains. Not just one rain. I got the good one. And think of just waiting and waiting. And what if? So they got to be. They have to learn to be patient, or they would go crazy. Similar to me. And then the second, verse 8, he really says, be patient in here. He says, brethren, about four times. So he's talking to believers. And he says, patience, about four times. Verse 8, you too, just like the farmer, you too, be patient. And then he says, strengthen your heart, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. There's an earlier in verse 5, when he's talking to the rich, you have lived luxuriously on the earth and have led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. And then he flips it to these believers. He says, be patient, strengthen your heart. Did I give somebody Hebrews? Chip? Yeah, could you read it? Gary.
13, 8 through 9.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Do not be carried about with various and strange doctrines, for it is good that they not be established by faith, not with food which have not property, those who have been occupied before.
Okay, the line in there is that I, first, Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and yes, forever. He does not change. If that email from Fort Hood, if they would have said, "Nah, it's the 13th," would that have changed who Jesus Christ was? And whether he cared about me or not? Would that have changed Jesus is the same yesterday and today and forever. Do not be carried away with various strange teachings. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. For it is good for the heart to be strengthened or established by grace. And that's what James is kind of referring back to. It's be patient, strengthen your hearts. Let us understand really, really, if this side of heaven, we can really grasp the idea of God's grace, that his love never changes towards me, no matter where I am. We just sang it in songs. He will always be there. Always. He never, ever changes. So strengthen your hearts. For he's coming back. His arrival is right around the corner. It's right at hand. It's not far away. And there are times in my life when I'm like, maybe come before Fort Hood is really, it would be nice. Just come early. And then I'm like, maybe I'd like to see Elijah born. Right? I mean, does anybody else have this thing like, well, come now and then, maybe put it off a little. I got some nice things going on now. So it really depends on whether you're in the middle of a trial or you're in the middle of a joy. So it's kind of like, and James is just saying, strengthen your heart. He's coming back. He's coming back. He promised. So there's hope beyond this trial or this joy or whatever life, wherever you may be in life right now. Then he says, in verse 9, don't complain. Do not complain, brethren, against one another. The judge is standing at the door. There's this, I think when pressure happens, it seems like in my life, when pressure happens, I'm like, since I'm on Fort Hood, I'll use Fort Hood. I want to blame somebody else. I want to blame the lady that's doing the drawings. Why aren't they done? I was at home on Saturday, and I got a phone call from her. It was like asking me questions. I'm like, I wanted to hang up. Well, you don't hang up a cell phone like that anymore. Yeah, yeah. I want to blame somebody else. I want to complain about the employees. I want to complain about my wife. I want to complain about my kids. I want to complain about the weather. But don't complain about each other. When it gets tough, don't say, look at James. He's got it way better. He's the pastor in Jerusalem. Why does he get it so nice? Or, don't complain about each other. When the pressure's on, think about our God. Strengthen your heart by grace, not by what God is doing in somebody else's life. I think that's sometimes real easy. Why do they have it so nice? Why do they have so much money? Why do they? Instead of sometimes looking at, I'd like to live in Iran. Nobody in our church got arrested on Christmas. So James is, don't complain. The word is that they use there is grumbling. And when you read the nation of Israel, when they got to the promised land and they're in the wilderness and, oh man, we need something to eat. No, okay, we'll give you manna. Well, man, I'm tired of just this bread. All it's supposed to be sweet. It talks about it's nice, and yeah, and you know, I love the. You know what mana means in Hebrew? I think I've told. What is it? It's like you could see a bunch of people on the. What is this? It's mana. You know, you're gonna. This is food. I'm giving you food every day. Oh man, I'd like some meat. Okay, here's quail. Started to grumble and complain. I think the problem with James is that it hits me right in the face. Because I find it real easy to be impatient. I mean, I heard a doctor talk one time, and he said, he ended up having to lose his license. He was an OB guy, and he had lost his license because he was taking his own drugs. Big trouble. And he said, he gave his testimony one time, and he said, I was on I-30 every day, and he said, oh, I got so angry with every car in front of me. And I thought, well, I didn't think much of that then. So now I try to stay off I-30. Because I'm thinking, they're not driving fast enough. Why are they in this lane? James, man. Don't complain about one another. You know, the judge is standing at the door. And I think what he's saying is, that's between God and them. Why do I worry about a guy driving 60 on 30? You know what I mean? I mean, that's kind of a simple. I don't want to get too personal about what sometimes I really complain about. These are fairly simple. Just don't, when it's tough and life is hard, don't complain against one another. And then he goes on to give an example in 10 and 11. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Think about the prophets. And we don't have to think about a bunch of them. Just think about Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah, guess what you get to do? You get to tell Israel that the nation is going to be collapsed, and there's going to be people coming in, and they're going to take you prisoner, and you're going to be deported, and, you know, great news. You know, this isn't like the positive, we know who I'm thinking about, and I'll talk to him in a minute. You know, every day is Friday. I mean, that wasn't Jeremiah's message. It's like, trouble's coming. This is not going to go. It's going to go from bad to worse. And they put him in a cistern at the end of his life, and he drowned in mud. You know, it's like they didn't want to listen. And he's called the weeping prophet. Now, when was the last time you read through Lamentations? I mean, I haven't. Like, I need some up stuff. You know, I'm not going to read Lamentations. But James is saying, think about this. What about who married the prophet? Hosea? Yeah. Hosea. He told Hosea to marry a prostitute and then buy her back after she's... And he patiently did it. So James is saying, think of those guys. They're our heroes. They didn't have this, like, charmed life. And then think of Job again. I've read through Job, but I don't pick up Job and go, how many people have... You know, I don't think when Jonathan and Kim were looking at and thinking of names, and we never thought about it, well, let's name our kid Job. Number one, everybody would think his name is Job. but nobody picks that name. And how many of you would just pick up the book of Job to say, I think I'll just have some encouraging reading. You know, that's not... There is some patience and endurance. I gave a couple verses out in Romans. And Romans 8 is one of my favorite chapters. But the beginning of Romans 8 ain't so hot. Mm-hmm. Who's got it? Read 8. This is Romans 8, verses 18 and 19. That, well, and there's this whole groaning. It says that we groan in this life, just waiting for this. And the suffering of this life can't even. It's like the whole, comparing apples with oranges. You can't do it. The suffering of this life can't be compared to what it will be like. I can't even think about. There's a song that it's like that. Well, what will it be like? Will I stand up and praise him, or will I fall on my knees? Will I even be able to talk at all? I mean, I don't know what it'll be like. Can you imagine seeing somebody, the God of the universe that loves me and loves you, and look, and instead of like being embarrassed and thinking, oh, what? And he just says, and I think he's going to have, I don't know if it'll be Bob or what, but a name for each one of us, and just say, what will it be like to see him face to face? We won't even think about the suffering of this day. So, and then verses 23 and 25 of Romans 8.
Not only so, but we ourselves have the first fruits of the Spirit, grown inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. The hope that is seen is no hope at all.
So James isn't the only one that talks about it. Just waiting and being patient and hoping for just, wow, what will this be like? James isn't saying just be patient, just cause. Be patient because there's this hope that is unbelievable. It's kind of a bad term, I guess. That is just almost incomprehensible, would be a better word, of the glory that we're waiting for in our new bodies, and no tears and no pain. And then Job, turn to the, why don't you, did I give Job to somebody? Yeah. Could you read it, Diane? Give him the verse. This is verse, the very end of the book of Job. The couple chapters before that, God is asking Job questions about, where were you when I did this? Did you set the stars in there? Did you understand? It's kind of like God is saying to him, Job, I get it that you don't get it because you weren't there. Could you make the hippopotamus? Could you make, could think about this? And then this is Job's, Job's answer is in verses 1 through 7, and basically Job says, I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is it that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have declared that which I did not understand. Job is like, okay, I get it. I get it. This isn't about me. I don't understand. And just this thought popped in my head. I remember I was talking to a girl at work that I think I've told you about her. She grew up in Argentina, and we were working on a job in Atlanta, and we were both leaving on the same plane. And she said to me, what brought you to Dallas? Or I asked her what brought her to Dallas, and she said her husband came here, blah, blah, blah. I said, where'd you grow up? Argentina. And then she asked me what brought me to Dallas. I said, seminary. So she goes, so you're an expert on God, so you've studied God. And I said, well, expert, but, and she said, would you tell me about him or her? And I said, so you probably grew up Catholic, right, in Argentina. She was Jewish. So Job finally got to the thing. When she said, tell me about him or her, I was like, whoa. Where do you start? Where do you start? And I said, well, number one, I'm going to use him. And there's a reason. because I think you're, in your Jewish background, it's a hymn. God's your father, and there's this idea of picture of a father that it, God wants us to have of him. Anyway, when she said you're an expert on God, and I'm like, whoa. You know, and but that's finally where Job got. You know, things are so too wonderful for me, which I do not know. This is unbelievable, God. I got it wrong. And then this, then read the verses. This is what God now says to Job's friends. Listen to this. It's great. Eliphaz, that's how I think you say it.
My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. Now therefore, take for yourself seven bulls and seven rams, and go to my servant Job and offer a burnt offering for yourselves, and my servant Job will pray for you. For I will accept him as so that I may not do with you according to your folly, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. So Eliphaz the Temanite and Bildad the Shuhite and Zophar the Naamanite went and did as the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job.
The line that I found interesting there was, God said to those three guys twice, my wrath kindled against you and against your two friends because you have not spoken of me what is right. He says it twice. You know, and if you read the book of Job, and these guys came with all kinds of advice, you know, Job, what did you do? What, you know, God is punishing you. What is it? You know, it must be sin. I mean, you read through what their advice, and you're like, man, with friends like this, who needs enemies? But at the end, God says, it's about me. You should have talked to Job about me. When life gets hard, when James says, you know, think of the example of Job. It's like, think about who God is. That's where Job came to. All right, God, I spoke out of turn. I didn't understand. It's too wonderful for me. That's what James wants them to understand. You're in trouble. He's telling his readers, you're in trouble, and I understand that. And life has changed, and it's not always what we expect. You know, my benefits aren't going to be the things that I think they ought to be. You didn't testify about me, you guys. When people are in trouble, when you talk to somebody that's struggling or they come to you with a question, talk about who God is. Tell him who he is. As little as you might know or understand, tell him about the goodness and his grace. That's it. Strengthen their heart by God's grace. And then at the end he says, don't swear. There's this whole thing about, but above all, my brethren, do not swear by either heaven or earth or with any other oath. There's this time, when you're under pressure, we tend to, you know, when pressure and failure, it's like sometimes we might want to take an oath and say something that ain't so true. You know, and you see on TV now the whole thing about our healthcare system and whether people lied or not lied and was it a half-truth, did they know? And I, it's like when Bill Clinton got up there and said, I did not do, almost when he's under pressure like that, he's going to lie. And what James says is, don't do that. Don't swear. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. When life gets hard, just buck up, you know. Don't take a false oath. Gary said at the end of, you know, when the Jews were, taking oaths in the Old Testament was you would take an oath in God's name. Well, the Jews got, God's name got so holy, they wouldn't even use it. Remember, that's why when you hear people say Yahweh, that's the word, the letters YHWH in Hebrew. And since they don't have vowels in there, then nobody really knows how it was pronounced. And it got so holy that they wouldn't even say his name. That's why they substituted Jehovah. So And his name got so holy that they would skip it. Like when they were writing the Word of God, they would write, and they found transcripts where they got so tired after they'd go along, write the word Yahweh, that the priest would have to, the scribe would have to go wash off, get a different pen, write again. Oh, there's Yahweh again. Got to do it again. And go wash and come back, different pen. So it got boring. So what would you do? Well, I'll skip Yahweh, and I'll just fill it in later. And that's what they do. There's transcripts where they got spaces where they were Yahweh, and they forgot. They missed it. They forgot to go back. And so what happened in the Old Testament, they would start taking, instead of swearing an oath in God's name, they would swear an oath in the temple, because the temple was where God dwelt. Then it got so crazy that they would say, well, I'm swearing on the gold of the temple. And Gary Unrich said, this was kind of like kids like, I'm swearing, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And James says, when the pressure's on, when struggles hit, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Be who you are. All right, and so as I thought through this whole thing, and I'm thinking, you know, I would love to be a preacher that would just talk about the greatness of and the fun of life. And so I started thinking about how do I balance this? And I got to admit that I think I would tend to be more on this side of the balance sheet. You know, the whole idea is your glass half empty or half full. You know, sometimes when I get into life and I start thinking about, oh, look at the wing traveling by us here. Yikes. I hate to have him turn the corner. Anyway, so this is kind of where I think I tend to be sometimes. And then there's these optimistic people that, you know, you like to hang out with, you know, that are always, and I think, you know, we could probably guess who some of them are here. I mean, Liz is pretty, since she ain't here, she's pretty up all the time. And even though, you know, she has a back problem, blah, 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 but she's pretty, you know, kids tend to be happier than us, you know, don't they? You know, like I saw, what's his name, Darth Vader, Robbie. I mean, how cool is that? And then she turned around, his head was showing. I mean, it was just so, kids are just like, wow, this is so cool, you know. So they tend, and it's nice to have optimistic kids. And as I thought through this, I started thinking, okay, so what's the happy medium in here? And I'm gonna get to this in a minute, because there's we can either, you know, so we're talking about struggles and I'm not gonna spell it out, and trials and difficult times, and then you got joy and you've got peace and you got David over here with lament psalms, right? If you read through the psalms, there's psalms where David is just like, what's going on? I mean, I'm struggling. My enemies are against me, and I'm, oh, man, I can't take it anymore. And then you got, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down beside green pastures. And so you got this, you know, the pessimistic stuff. You got, how many have ever read Watchman Nee, The Normal Christian Life? Anybody? Me neither. I mean, it's about, really, I mean, it's about suffering, you know, what he went through. I think he was in China, right? I believe. Or I'm reading the biography. I've started it. I'm partway through. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Anybody know about Dietrich Bonhoeffer? He wrote a book called The Cost of Discipleship. Well, I'm reading a book about him, and he's really, he was Lutheran. He grew up Lutheran. His parents were atheists, or like real liberal, I don't know, they were atheists. And they wanted him to become a doctor, and he became a theologian, and they thought he was a failure, and blah, blah, blah. Well, you start talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and you realize this is the dude that was in Germany, tried to kill Hitler. He had a group of guys, which, you know, how do you back the theology of killing your president? Anyway, that he fled Germany. He's here in the United States. He's safe. He's free. He goes back. And I'm like, would I go back? There's no. I got to tell you, right now, if I had that choice, no. Goes back. 3 days before the war's over, he's executed. 3 days. So you got these guys over here, kind of these pessimistic like stories that you know, I'm not going to pick up Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Cost of Discipleship because I want to feel good, you know. It's kind of, and Fox's Book of Martyrs, a whole book on people that have been killed. You know, we want, when Alan talks about that, the pastor in Iran, it's like, I kind of want to ignore this. Really. I want to be happier. Think of this guy's wife. He was, the one guy's from the U.S. and his wife is here. And so you're like, and then when I was thinking about this and I was thinking about being on this side. And remember the book, this was years ago, I'm Okay, You're Okay? And then I thought, I'd probably write a title, I'm a Mess and So Are You. There's this whole, that's the, so I'm like, I think I spend probably too much time over here, thinking about it. And I get, it's easy for, I don't know, it's easy to get depressed, it's easy. If you start thinking about it too much, it's like, ugh. And when Joshua called on Sunday, his temperature was dropping and he's sick as a dog. And then I go to Phoenix and I tell the guys at Phoenix about, Joshua's, it's a low temperature, not a high temperature. And I said, I've never heard of that. And the one guy goes, the only time I've heard of that is when somebody was ready to die. Oh my God. So I get the phone out, calling Diane, is everything okay? So I hate to admit it, but I spent a lot of time in that. Then you got the other extreme over here. And I got to go through this because I think this is important. You got the other extreme over here. Norman Vincent Peale. That was our aide. That was our, the power of positive thinking. You just think, think happy thoughts. And I think there is a sense that that's true. All the self-talk. How many times when I'm playing handball and I think, you idiot. And I'm not talking about the guy I'm hitting it to. I'm thinking about me. And if I probably had more positive thoughts, like I'm going to kill you. I'm going to beat you. I'd probably do better. But self-talk, and so there's a sense in which there's this, there is some good things about thinking positive and optimistic and things are going to be okay. When we were doing Diane's, the fuel filter in Diane's truck, and then we lift the truck up onto the lift, and it's 6 feet in the air, and he goes to bring it back down, and he pushes the button, and it doesn't work. All right, this part of me is like, okay, call Diane. The car's going to be fixed, but it's 6 feet in the air, and you can't get it down. And I'm thinking, oh, no, what are we going to – well, I think he might be a little more optimistic because he knows a little bit more about this stuff, too. I'm thinking, okay, call the electrician, get – and he fixed it. But there's a – so – and I don't know, if you're one of these guys like me, then you can kind of relate. And if you're one of these over here, you're thinking, Bob's an idiot. Life is better. But then you've got my favorite guy that I make fun of, and then I'm reading this. Brothers, don't judge each other. Is he saying, don't make fun of Joel Osteen? He's an easy target, But is some of the things he says is really okay? It's okay, but I looked up books that he wrote because I was thinking about the normal Christian life and the cost of discipleship over here, and I'm a mess and so are you. But I declare your best life now. 7 steps to this, and every day a Friday. And there's this, so he's this optimistic and I'm thinking, well, David was kind of like that, wasn't he, sometimes, writing the Psalms? So he started thinking about, okay, so if we're going to balance this, what would you call somebody in the middle? Throw out some words, because I had some words. What would you call them?
A realist.
Perfect. That's what I thought. Wait, realistic, right? Okay, you might be more of an optimist. Because when I said this, because that was my first thought, was realistic. So be realistic about life. If you're a pessimist, you head right there. You head right there. Okay, I'm going to be realistic. Life is awful. And I'm going to die tomorrow, and I'm not going to, Fort Hood is going to go terrible, and they're going to hate it, and they're going to, Really, it's crazy. I went a minute I thought realistic, I went whoop right over here. And so I was asking Diane. She asked me, and she said, the minute you think realistic, pessimists go right here. I'm like, that's right. That's right where I went. I think there's a better term. And I don't want to overuse this term, but I think if we just become authentic. Do I have to hide that I'm a pessimist? Do I have to pretend to you guys that I'm always happy and life is always good? Huh?
Please do.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to live with really. It's serious, you know. So instead of just thinking realistic, just be authentic. When you're stuck over here, when life is a struggle, why do I have to pretend it's not? You know, and don't pretend in front of us. The nice thing about a smaller group is it's hard to hide. You know, I was here one Sunday, I was worried about something, I forget what. I worry a lot. And Betsy said, you look worried. I'm like, I guess I can't hide it. You know, I guess I can't. But if we could just be, and this isn't like, you don't have to tell everybody everything, you know. I have friends that I can talk to. I have friends that will let me be a whiner and not say, stop whining. A guy at Reinhardt gave us a shirt that had the big circle with the cross through it and it said whining. You know, don't whine. I mean, people are tired. You don't want to be around a whiner too long, you know. But there's got to be people we can whine to. And so I think when you look at the end of Job and you look at when God says at the end of the whole mess, Job had more than he started with. Why? Because he testified about who God was. He understood, I don't get it all. You know, I know there's going to be struggles and there's going to be lament psalms and there's going to be joy and praise psalms. So in order for me to balance this, let me just be authentic. Why do I have to, you know, I got to tell, and I've never met Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I don't know what his sermons were like. And he was a youth pastor and talks about in this book about how he did and how he loved kids and blah, blah, blah. But it would have been fun to watch him or listen to him and then listen to Olstein. And that, to me, it doesn't look all that authentic. His hair is too perfect. His suits are perfect. His, you know, everything is perfect. You know, you want him to mess up. But he's perfect. Perfect delivery, perfect everything. So I think when James, when you look at this book and you see the hard things that James says to these guys about suffering and struggling, I think there's a balance. I think James is trying to say to them, you thought when you got into Christianity, when you became a believer and you understood who the Messiah was, life was going to be great. No more, you know, I don't have to deal with going to the temple anymore and all the sacrifices. Nobody has to see me bringing sacrifices every day knowing that I'm a lousy sinner. Well, but now I got the Holy Spirit speaking to my heart. Is that what I called you to? Well, all of a sudden that becomes a little more of a struggle. So anyway, I think this book is, I was so afraid to teach through this book because I was like, you know, works and grace. And it's just like, I think James is saying, be authentic. Be who you are. When you're hurting, cry. When you're happy, laugh. Don't hide it, you know. If you have good things to say, anyway, that's kind of what I think he's talking about. Let's pray. Father, as we approach this week, and I know all of us have things that we might be facing that we look forward to or not look forward to. Father, help me, help us take today. There's enough trouble for tomorrow. They'll take care of themselves. And we sang songs about how you care for us. You won't leave us. Why am I worried? as we go through the, you know, Monday morning, and we have a chance to get up and live again, and have a day to honor you, Father, help us to think about who you are. Not our struggles, not our joys, not our what we face or don't face. That we think about the first thoughts are just about you and how you love us and care for us. And then we can go through and know that the struggles we face aren't a surprise to you. The joys that we have are gifts from you. It's in your Son's name I pray.
See you then.